You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
One down, three to go. It certainly wasn't pretty. But at this point in the season, the Rockets will certainly take it and work on their flaws after a victory. With that said, welcome into the first postseason episode of Locked On Rockets, the only daily podcast covering the NBA's best basketball team in the regular season. I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official flagship in Houston over at 790 AM. The Rockets won their game one of their first round series 104-101 over the 8th seeded Minnesota Timberwolves on Sunday night at Toyota Center. Certainly not a pretty game, as evidenced by only a 3-point margin. James Harden played out of his mind, 44 points, 8 assists, 15 of 26 shooting, hashtag MVP, hashtag playoff Harden. He was amazing. Clint Capella, 24 points, 12 boards on 10 of 15 shooting, played 34 minutes. Just battled his heart out on the interior against Karl-Anthony Towns, and ultimately the Rockets had to survive because other than James Harden, the Rockets were just 3 of 25 for the game from three-point range, just 10 made threes as a team, and 7 of those came from James, as you can imagine, a lot of those were guarded in isolation. It wasn't like James made them in flow because it wasn't like James was left open to begin with. It was just James making superhuman MVP plays. The shots the Rockets got within rhythm, well, they got about the quantity you would normally expect. The Timberwolves, not like they played a particularly great defensive game, and yet the Rockets still did not make them, and that's why this ultimately went down to the wire. As far as initial thoughts in our 3 points recap, I tend to look at this more positively than I do negatively. That's not to say that I think this was a great game, because I don't, but ultimately, the way the Rockets had their flaws in this game, making only 3 of 25 threes outside of James Harden, that's not sustainable. If there are questions you had about this Rockets team going into the postseason, the two guys you would have wondered about, and I'm not saying it's fair, but based on their histories, at least a year ago, it would have been James Harden and Clint Capella. Harden, after what we all know happened late in Game 4 and overtime of Game 5 against the Spurs, and of course, the entirety of Game 6, Clint Capella, what happened when he went up against Steven Adams, a very talented big man in round one. So if there were two guys you would question, Capella based on his youth and Harden fair or unfair based on the hashtag playoff Harden stereotype that's out there, although I think we're starting to redefine that stereotype after game one, fortunately. But those are the guys that step up. And I'll start with Harden because 44 points, 8 assists. Look, the Timberwolves realized, especially by the fourth quarter of this game, when it was close and it was a 4-point game going to the final quarter, the 3-point shooters for the Rockets were not firing. So you did not see a whole lot of fear. One of the things that I think happened as the game moved along, the Rockets were so cold from the perimeter. Clint Capella, he had 24 and 12. Well, of his 24 points, 20 of them came in the first 21 minutes of the game. He had 20 and 9 with like 3.5 minutes to go until halftime. And it's not that Clint played a lot more poorly in the second half. It's that the high pick and roll became a lot easier to defend when the Wolves did not have to account for the shooters as much, when they could help a lot more. So ultimately, with the high pick and roll taken away and the shooters not making their shots from the perimeter, it was up to James Harden to make plays one-on-one, make the step-back threes, make the shots going to the rim. And, well, he did both of them. He was 7 or 12 behind the arc. He was 8 of 14 from inside the arc. He was 7 of 9 on his free throws. So from 2, from 3, from the free throw line, Harden did everything you could expect. Actually, despite the incredible workload, had to shoot 26 times, a very high field goal attempt total for James. Turned it over only 3 times in the game. Now, the Rockets as a team had too many turnovers, and, well, that's because Chris Paul had 6. But we'll talk about that in the third segment when we talk about the things that went wrong in this game. As far as James to take that kind of workload and still shoot almost 60%, only turn over 3 times, score 44 points, be above 50% inside the arc, about 50% outside the arc, almost 80% from the free throw line, incredible. This was the quintessential MVP game. this was what an MVP does. When so many other things were going wrong, and I do think a lot of it had to do with rust, lots of weird things happened in Game 1, especially the late Sunday night Game 1. The Rockets hadn't played since Wednesday night. Well, really, they hadn't played since Tuesday night because everybody sat out the regular season finale in Sacramento except for P.J. Tucker and Gerald Green. So they had 5 days off, period, and they had not played a high-intensity game since March because the last Saturday of March is when they clinched the number one seed in home court throughout the playoffs. So I thought there was a lot of rest. It's one of those things that comes with the territory, rest versus rust, because you get both of those when you clinch as early as the Rockets do. And Minnesota, they can be dangerous because between Jimmy Butler, Karl Anthony Towns, Jeff Teague, who, give that guy credit, Jeff Teague in the fourth quarter, it felt like the Rockets should have won this game by a lot, but Jeff Teague, even against P.J. Tucker, 15 points, 9 rebounds, 8 assists, repeatedly made plays down the stretch of that game. Andrew Wiggins stepped up, 18 points, 7 of 15 from the field. The Timberwolves, they're an 8 seed because of their defensive deficiencies, but their defensive deficiencies were mitigated because the Rockets missed so many open threes, and then combine that with Andrew Wiggins, Jeff Teague, the variables getting hot. All of a sudden, they can be a dangerous team. That's why, if you listen to me, both here on the podcast and on Twitter, at Ben Dubose, I've been in favor of playing the San Antonio Spurs because I don't think they have nearly as many creators. Minnesota can be dangerous, especially if an off game for the Rockets, and it looked like this was the game in which the Timberwolves playing with house money, it was there for them to steal. And James Harden just did not let it happen. On a night when the Rockets played, I would say overall, one of their more down performances of the entire season, at the same time, they still won a playoff game because that's how good James Harden was. Now, yes, if the Rockets ask this of him every night, to shoot 26 times, to have 44-8, then he might wear down, to play 41 minutes because he didn't even come out in the fourth quarter of that game. That's an unsustainable workload, although there are no back-to-backs in the playoffs, and this week in particular, Sunday, then Wednesday, then Saturday, there's a lot of time off. I don't know that there's going to be that much of a taxing effect when you consider all the days off, especially in round one. The NBA spaces out the games for the benefit of TV. But in general, yes, at some point, that's going to catch up with you. The good news, I don't really see it as sustainable. I view it as just a lot of outliers, a lot of random bleep happens in this game. The Rockets just 10 of 37 from 3, P.J. Tucker 1 of 5, Trevor Ariza 0 of 4, Eric Gordon 1 of 7, Chris Paul 1 of 6. No one could throw it in the ocean. They didn't like the officiating down the stretch of the game. Clint Capella got going early, but that went away late because Minnesota was able to help more on Capella on the pick and rolls because of the absence of shooting. There were so many reasons the Rockets could have said, this is not our night, and James did not let it happen. Now, yes, those other reasons, they need to get fixed. Those deficiencies need to get better. But the good news is we have 82 games of data that says they will. So in terms of my takeaways, I don't really see it as that much of a negative because the negatives, it's stuff that over a sample size is almost certainly going to correct itself. The positives, if you had any doubts about the Rockets as far as the regular season Rockets being the number one team in the NBA by a mile, not translating to the playoffs, the two guys you would have wondered about, it's the youth of Clint Capella and the way the last postseason run ended for James Harden. So to see both of those games, those guys step up in this game and not let you lose it, to me, that says more positively than the struggles do negatively. And on that note, we'll transition into the second segment of our show, a little bit of talk about Clint Capella. Because early on, he was a big part of the Rockets setting the tone. Got off to a 15-4 start in this game. We discussed in our preview show last week the importance of starting games well, not letting Minnesota feel like they had a shot. And ultimately, I thought the Rockets took the game very seriously. Got out to a 15-4 start. Wolves scored just 4 points in the first 6 minutes. The defensive intensity was really, really good. And Clint Capella, both ends, was a huge part of that. We saw him making plays defensively. He would run the floor, get the alley-oops. As I mentioned, by the 3:30 mark of the first half, he had 20-9. Just ridiculous. And then on the other end, Karl Anthony Towns is a beast. He had 8 points on 3 of 9 shooting in 40 minutes. Clint Capella won this game on both ends of the floor, especially in the early going. And just as you look at last year and you say, well, Steven Adams sort of baptized Clint Capella. It was the baptism of a young Clint Capella against Steven Adams, who kind of showed him the ropes of playoff basketball. This felt like Clint Capella doing the same thing to Karl-Anthony Towns, and it's just incredible how well Clint Capela has rebounded from that a year ago when a lot of folks, that first postseason run a year ago, especially the opening series, were so down on Clint in year three. Now, it's a little unfair because with the transition he made out of Europe, year three for Clint was really like year two when you factor in that year one he almost played exclusively at the G League level with the Vipers. But regardless, year three, it didn't start well. But he got better as the playoffs moved along last year, played a lot better in Game 5, the close against Oklahoma City, and then the entirety of the second-round series against the Spurs. Certainly was not his fault that the Rockets went on to lose that series. And then we've seen the strides all season long that he made over this past offseason. He's gotten better defensively, offensively, just an incredible work ethic, and I think it showed tonight. And one thing that I thought benefited Clint, the generally looser whistles, and this was an inconsistently called game, I would say, but in general, the looser whistles of the playoffs, I think that really benefits Clint against Karl-Anthony Towns, because Karl-Anthony Towns, he lives on the up fakes, the head fakes, and we saw a lot during the regular season. We saw a couple of instances of it tonight where Carl thought he had gotten a foul on Clint. He didn't get him. Clint played 34 minutes. That speaks to his stamina. That's something he's worked to improve. And he also had just three fouls in those. And he had three blocks, so he wasn't going to call for the fouls. He got the blocks on Cat. He did everything you could possibly ask as far as setting a tone for the Rockets in this game. And that was the most important thing for the Rockets going in. Now, the negative, of course, the Rockets, despite getting off to that 15-4 start and playing with so much energy in front of their home fans, it wasn't a blowout. They had to escape by just 3 points. But that goes back to what we discussed in segment one, which is that, well, when your shooters outside of James Harden make just 3 of 25 from behind the arc, if the Rockets don't make their threes at a better pace than that, they're just not a very good basketball team. That's the reality. We can be honest with that. And so it wasn't so much a matter, in my opinion, of the Rockets maybe not taking the game seriously, combination of just randomness, missing shots, maybe some rust, but ultimately I thought they wanted the game. And ultimately, based on how it ended, you might could make a case that it's more psychologically scarring for the Timberwolves to lose that way than it is, say, if they had lost in a blowout. Because for the Timberwolves to have so many things go right, for the Rockets to miss that many threes, for Chris Paul to play that poorly, for all those things to happen, and yet Minnesota still loses, it bodes relatively poorly, in my opinion, for them going forward, even if you could look at it in isolation and say, well, Minnesota was right there, and certainly there are some positives, but I see a lot more unsustainable on the Minnesota side of the fence. For example, the first half, when the Rockets went up big, we mentioned how they started, led by Clint Capela, the 20-9. One of the only reasons that the Timberwolves stayed in the game, just a ridiculous throwback performance from Derrick Rose, who's been largely garbage the entire year. 16 points, 4 assists on 50% shooting in 24 minutes. Where in the world did that come from? Andrew Wiggins, 18 on 7 of 15 shooting, made a 3 in there. There's a lot more unsustainable on the Minnesota side of the fence than there is in terms of what the Rockets did, when you factor in that the Rockets' best two players, James Harden and Clint Capela, were there all year long. Now, sure, you can poke holes in James Harden and say, well, it took a 44-point, 15-26 night from the field to do it. Well, yeah, but Chris Paul, 5 of 14, 14 points, 6 turnovers, just 4 assists. That's not exactly his norm either. PJ Tucker, Trevor Ariza, Eric Gordon shooting a combined 2 of 16 from 3. Actually, let's throw in Gerald Green. To factor this in, Chris Paul, of course he was bad, so let's throw Chris out in isolation. We'll deal with him in segment 3. Your supporting cast, your shooters, Trevor, PJ, Eric, and Gerald Green were a combined 2 of 19 from 3. And a lot of them were in and out. That's not sustainable. The Rockets are going to make their shots. Derrick Rose making 50% shooting, and 16 points in 24 minutes, that's not sustainable. That might be a once-in-a-season game for him. So when you're looking at this game in terms of predictive value, there's a lot more, in my opinion, positive to take from the Houston side of the fence than there is from Minnesota, because the two guys that stepped up for Houston, James Harden and Clint Capela, Capella did it at the beginning of the game, which, as I said, was key in terms of making a statement. And then, for whatever reason, it didn't close the door. Well, James Harden did what MVPs do, and he closed it down the stretch of the game. And ultimately, those two guys, especially given the significance of them going against the two best players for Minnesota, Karl-Anthony Towns, who mentioned he had just 8 points and 3 of 9 shooting, Jimmy Butler, just 13 points on 4 of 11 shooting. Harden and Capella, well, certainly Clint mentioned his defense. James Harden defensively was very good as well. Also had several big anticipation. Let's try that again. Had a couple of big steals down the stretch of the game. In general, the model of Harden and Capella playing well, maybe they don't play that well, but it's a lot more sustainable than the model of Derrick Rose, Jamal Crawford making 3 threes, and all the sorcery it took for Minnesota to somehow stay in this game, and the Rockets making just 3 of 25 threes outside of James Harden, including 2 of 19 from the Ariza, PJ Tucker, Eric Gordon, and Gerald Green foursome. By the way, under the radar, but Gerald Green had 7 rebounds in his 20 minutes, thought he played very well. Even if he wasn't making his threes from an energy standpoint, he was very big in this game, I thought. But ultimately, much bigger storylines than that. Starting with James, I would say Capella second on the list. James gets the justifiable headlines because he closed the door, but don't forget how Clint Capella started. He's the reason the Rockets were able to play in front for a lot of the first half, and ultimately why the Rockets were able to stay so close over the first 3 quarters before James Harden could take over down the stretch and salt it away, putting the Rockets up 1-0 in this best-of-seven series with the 104-105 victory. Or the 104-101 victory, excuse me. Now, we spent the first two segments discussing James Harden and Clint Capella. What went right? And I know there's a lot of you that want more discussion on what went wrong. Certainly, the shooting. As I mentioned, 3 of 25 from 3 outside of James Harden. That's not good enough. 2 of 19 from Ariza, Tucker, Gordon, and Gerald Green. It's terrible. It's pitiful. And the Rockets are not going to go anywhere if that continues. The good news, they know that. It's obvious. And they've made those shots all season long. I don't see any reason to panic or see it as anything other than just one of those bleep happens games. And fortunately, the Rockets have enough overall talent to get a win against a playoff team in spite of all that. The one thing that's a little more troubling, Chris Paul, 14 points, 5 of 14 shooting, just 1 of 6 from 3, 6 turnovers, including a baffling one in the last 10 seconds when the Rockets had the ball up 3. All they had to do was get fouled and make a couple of free throws and put the game away, and he forced a pass up the court, ended up throwing it away, and ultimately it's why the Timberwolves got the ball down 3 with under 10 seconds left and almost had a shot to tie the game. Now, the Jimmy Butler shot he went, got off in the final seconds, the foot was inside the line, so it would not have tied the game even if it went in. But the point is, it's just an inexcusable situation for Chris to put himself in. That turnover just cannot happen in that spot, and I think he's the first one to acknowledge that. Overall, I'm not that worried about Chris because, in my opinion, it would be a bigger storyline to worry about with Chris if he hadn't had the positive games down the stretch of the year against the Blazers when he had the game winner, the positive showing he had against the Lakers, the second to last game of the regular season. If we had not seen Chris Paul come back from missing 5 of 6 games with that left leg injury, I might be a little concerned that it's something more than just randomness. But since Chris did come back, he hasn't missed time. He's played well. It's a lot easier for me to treat it as a game in which, for whatever reason, he just played poorly. And before anyone gets ridiculous and starts saying, well, Chris Paul has never been to the Western Conference Finals, and starts with some sort of lazy playoff CP3 nonsense, here's a reminder of what Chris Paul did in the playoffs last year against the Utah Jazz, a very good defensive team. And this was with Blake Griffin out, so very little as far as help offensively on the Clippers. In that best-of-seven series against a good defensive team in Utah, in that 7-game series, Chris averaged over 25 points per game, nearly 10 assists per game, 5 rebounds, on 50% shooting from the field. The year before that, he averaged 24 points, over 7 assists, on 49% shooting from the field. The playoff run before that, that was when they got to the semis and ultimately lost to the Rockets in 7 games. Even on a bum hamstring, he shot over 50% from the field, had over 22 points per game, almost 9 assists, And, of course, had the game winner in Game 7 off of one leg over Tim Duncan to win an incredible series against the defending champion Spurs. That's the last three playoff runs for Chris Paul. He has been incredibly good. It was a down night for Chris. It is an outlier in terms of his recent history, in terms of the last week or two, and especially in terms of his playoff history. I know some are saying, well, he's 32 years old. Okay, he was 32 last week and it wasn't affecting him then. He was 31 last postseason. That didn't seem to affect him then. I'm not saying that age is no factor at all, but generally you're not just going to see it magically crop up in one game. You're going to see signs really for weeks, months, the entire season. We have not seen those. Now, granted, if there's one flaw that you could point to in Chris Paul this year, even though he finished the year number one in the entire league in real plus minus, ESPN's metric, and so many others around the league, well, not number one in so many others, but top 10 and a ton of the really respected advanced metrics. You can point out they didn't play 60 games. He did miss time. Now, the Rockets were ultra conservative with his injuries because they're so good. But if you saw a reason that maybe he wasn't explosive, if he wasn't getting the burst you would like him to get, if you saw him hobbling out there, then I could accept that maybe from an injury standpoint, there's something to worry about, because that has been there a little more than you'd like this year, even if we accept the Rockets treated him conservatively. But I didn't see that tonight. He went out there, he played 34 minutes. Honestly, his mid-range shots in the second half, he had a couple of them that were very important, because, as I mentioned earlier, with the Rockets not making their perimeter shots, it made it even more imperative that Harden and, to a lesser extent, Paul, make their plays in isolation, since they couldn't really rely on the shooters. He had a couple of those. He hit big free throws down the stretch. It wasn't like he didn't want the ball. It wasn't like he wasn't moving well. He just missed a lot of shots. And then had a couple of poor decisions. It sucks. It happens. But this game is hard. This stuff happens. I mean, the guy that is going to prevent James Harden from being the unanimous MVP, now James will win it going away. LeBron James lost at home his first playoff game earlier today. Shot well below 50%, and his team got blown out by the Indiana Pacers in Cleveland. This stuff happens. This game is hard. So if it continues, is it something to worry about? Sure. But right now, after seeing Chris Paul play well for most of the season, play extremely well after coming off the shelf the last week or so, I'm not going to jump off the bandwagon and say, well, he had a bad week, so he's over the hill and there's something to worry about, and James Harden doesn't have enough help. No, it goes back to what we've said throughout this show. The ways the Rockets struggled tonight, 3 of 25 outside of James Harden from 3. Chris Paul, 6 turnovers to just 4 assists. That's not sustainable. That's not who the Rockets are, and we have 82 games of evidence showing that. And Minnesota is not a good defensive team. The Rockets just had a bad night. And I think in part they haven't played since last Tuesday, the regulars, and they haven't played a competitive game since March in terms of the game actually having significance, win or lose. To me, it's easier to accept that, hey, the Rockets were rusty, and outside of James Harden and Clint Capella, they had a bad night. It's easier for me to accept that than some crazy narrative about Chris Paul being over the hill or playoff pressure or anything like that. I think randomness and rust are much more plausible reasons for what happened to the Rockets, especially on the offensive end of the floor. And I think in general, you should be more happy that ultimately, because James Harden is just out of this world, the MVP for a reason, 44 points. Clint Capella was just a beast. Went Chuck Norris, to use his Players Tribune reference. I'll make an analogy there. He roundhoused Karl-Anthony Towns tonight. And defensively, the Rockets led the Timberwolves just 101 points. P.J. Tucker, even though he couldn't seem to throw it in the ocean, I thought defensively he was all over the court for most of the game. Now, he did get burned late by Jeff Teague. That's a tough matchup, especially on switches for him. But in general, I thought he was good defensively. The Rockets overall, you would expect Trevor Ariza, Chris Paul to be dynamic defensively. They were. Mentioned Gerald Green off the bench, his 20 minutes. He was big. James Harden had some key plays on the defensive end in addition to the incredible workload he took on offensively. I would have to mention that the Rockets had two big pieces, not necessarily big pieces, but rotation pieces, I should say, Ryan Anderson and Luke Bamute, still out. Ryan Anderson could be back for Game 2. Sounds like if he's not, certainly for Game 3 on Saturday. So one more game without Ryan at the most. And I think in a game which the Rockets seemed to need someone to throw it in the ocean, another three-point shooter could certainly help. And of course, Luke Bamute giving you one more defender. I don't know if he comes back this round. I think ultimately the Rockets feel they can win it without him. But he is on the court. He's doing work with the team in terms of practices. And Mike D'Antoni says it's not as bad as the last time. So I do have optimism that you'll see him before this playoff run is done for the Rockets. And of course, he'll help you even more on the defensive side. So not a pretty game for the Rockets. But ultimately, you'll take the win. It's one out of the four they need to advance out of the first round. And as far as the flaws they need to correct, yeah, there's a lot of them. But A, they know it, and B, as far as flaws go, they're the correctable kind. So I think ultimately, even if you're having a harder time going to sleep than you might like, based on your heart pounding a little more than you would prefer in the first quarter, or the first game, I should say, the final quarter against a number 8 seed in Minnesota, ultimately, I think there's a lot more that bodes well out of this game than there is that bodes poorly. So with that, I think it's an appropriate spot to wrap up today's show. As always, thanks again to all of you guys for listening. Once more, the happy final from Toyota Center. Rockets 104, Timberwolves 101. Rockets get off to a 1-0 lead in this first round best of 7 series with the Timberwolves. Game 2 at Toyota Center on Wednesday night. Hope to see some of you guys out there then. Until Wednesday night, if you want more from me or the show, the best place to get it is on Twitter. I'm at Ben DuBose. Show is at Locked On Rockets. Also got an email address, lockedonrockets@gmail.com. Questions about the team, suggestions for the show, inquiries about how to become a potential advertiser and reach a huge audience of diehard Rockets fans in this playoff run ahead. That's all things you can do by reaching out to me, Ben DuBose, at our email account, which is lockedonrockets@gmail.com. We've also got a website, lockedonrockets.com. We've got a Facebook account at facebook.com/lockedonrockets. And, well, we've also got subscription pages, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Megaphone, wherever you listen to your podcast, just search for Locked On Rockets or search for any show across the NBA or NFL that includes Locked On Texans, our sister show across town covering the Houston Texans, all across this Locked On Podcast Network with podcasts covering every team across the association and the NFL. That also includes the other 15 teams in the NBA playoffs. So if you want to see the Locked On Timberwolves for their reaction, well, you can tune into Colton Molesky. You can find his show, Locked On Timberwolves, same place you find Locked On Rockets, or you can listen to any other show with teams in the playoffs, and you will find all sorts of great coverage throughout the next couple of months. And, well, I don't know if the entire NBA has a couple of months, but we hope we do here in Houston. So for now, folks, hope everybody gets some rest before the work week ahead. One final time, the happy final from Toyota Center. Rockets 104, Timberwolves 101. Rockets won game one and are off to a 1-0 start in the postseason this first round against the 8th-seeded Timberwolves. So folks, have a good night, and we'll be talking again very soon with some more reaction between Game 1 and Game 2 right here on Locked On Rockets, your home for daily coverage of Houston Rockets basketball.